Hezbollah says it is now in an open-ended battle with Israel as both sides trade fire.
They haven't stopped for a single day attacking us.
Anura Kumar Dasanayake is elected president of Sri Lanka.
The public put faith in his pledge to fight corruption and bolster a fragile economic recovery.
And in China, mini-movies released in 60-second chunks for smartphones has turned into a $5 billion industry.
It's chock full of melodrama, but each episode is a mere minute long, timed to keep viewers watching and paying for more.
Today is Monday, September 23rd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Scott Walterman.
Sirens sounded across Israel all night as multiple rockets and missiles were fired from Lebanon and Iraq.
Israel and Hezbollah exchanged heavy fire Sunday. Smoke rose above Lebanon as Israeli warplanes carried out the most intense bombardment across the country's south in almost a year of conflict, while Hezbollah fired rockets deep into northern Israel. Linda Gradstein reports from Jerusalem.
The Hezbollah rockets on Sunday reached deeper into Israel than at any time since the war between Israel and Hamas began almost a year ago. Although most were shot down, schools all over northern Israel closed and hospitals in northern Israel moved underground. One 17-year-old was killed when he lost control of the car he was driving during a rocket siren. Hezbollah said the rocket fire was aimed at the Ramat David Air Base near the northern city of Haifa. Several homes were damaged as residents hid in shelters.
We didn't think it would reach us here. Who is waiting for it? Who wants it? No one, certainly not us. It's hard, really hard. It's not easy. We have the holidays ahead of us. Who knows what will happen? With God's help, maybe it will get better.
In Lebanon, thousands attended the funeral of Ibrahim Akil, killed by Israel in a targeted airstrike Friday in Beirut. Hezbollah Deputy Chief Naim Qassem said attacks on Israel will continue.
Threats will not stop us, and we are not afraid of the worst-case scenario. We are ready to face all military possibilities.
Israeli analysts say that Hezbollah has suffered a severe blow in the past week, starting when thousands of pagers exploded in a complex operation attributed to Israel.
It was a damage that made a lot of confusion and damaged their command and control of Hezbollah as an organization, which is, it's really difficult to have an organizational conduct of an army, and this is what is Hezbollah, when you don't have how to communicate, and 3,000 of your commanders or military operatives basically cannot function.
At the same time, she said that Hezbollah still has significant capabilities and tens of thousands of rockets. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says the Hamas attack on Israel on October 7th was unprovoked, and Hezbollah joined the attacks on Israel the next day.
No country can accept the wanton rocketing of its cities. We can't accept it either. We will take whatever action is necessary to restore security and to bring our people safe back to their homes.
Israeli analysts say that so far, both Israel and Hezbollah have held back from a total war. Israel has not hit Lebanese infrastructure, such as power plants, and Hezbollah has not fired on central Israel. Giora Island, a former national security advisor, says that what happens next is up to Iran, which controls Hezbollah.
And the Iranian will tell them stop the war only if there is some kind of international pressure, American, French and others, for the benefits of all of us. The Americans, the Iranians and others, it is better to stop this escalation, because if we do not stop it, it will probably bring not only to total war between Israel and Hezbollah, but as many people estimate, it might create actually a regional war.
Israel remains on high alert for further Hezbollah attacks. Schools in northern Israel will remain closed and hospitals continue to operate underground. Linda Gradstein, VOA News, Jerusalem.
Sri Lanka elected Marxist-leaning Anura Kumar Dasanayake as the new president on Sunday after a second round of counting. The first time a recount has ever decided the result in an election in Sri Lanka. We get more now from Reuters correspondent Fiona Jones.
The public put faith in his pledge to fight corruption and bolster a fragile economic recovery following its worst financial crisis in decades. Dissanayake led from start to finish during the counting of ballots, polling over 42% of the votes. That's despite not having any political lineage, like some of his rivals in the presidential election. He knocked out incumbent president Ranil Wickremesinghe and opposition leader Sajit Premadasa to become Sri Lanka's 10th president. The election was also a referendum on Wickremesinghe. He led the heavily indebted nation's fragile economic recovery from a meltdown in 2022. But the austerity measures that were key to this recovery hindered his bid to return to office. He finished third with 17% of the vote. Premadasa, in second place, got almost 33%. This election marked the first time in Sri Lanka's history that the presidential race was decided by a second round of counting. That's after the top two candidates failed to win the mandatory 50% of votes to be declared winner.
Reuters correspondent Fiona Jones. We're following these other stories from around the world. An explosion in a coal mine in eastern Iran has killed at least 51 workers and injured at least 20 others. The disaster is one of the worst mining incidents in the country's history. U.S. congressional leaders announced an agreement Sunday on a short-term spending bill that will fund federal agents for about 3 months, averting a possible partial government shutdown when the new budget year begins October 1st, and pushing final decisions until after the November election. U.S. President Joe Biden is expected to meet with Vietnam's president and ruling Communist Party chief Tho Lam on Wednesday. A person familiar with matters told the news service Reuters. The meeting is expected to take place on the sidelines of the United Nations General Assembly in New York. In our continuing coverage of the 2024 U.S. presidential election, U.S. lawmakers from both major political parties have called for cooling the nation's heated political rhetoric 6 weeks before the November 5th presidential election. This follows a second apparent assassination attempt on former President Donald Trump and his claims of immigrants eating people's pets that has an Ohio Haitian community on edge. Here's VOA's Arash Arabasadi.
U.S. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump holds his first outdoor rally since last Sunday's second apparent assassination attempt. Without offering evidence, Trump had earlier blamed the rhetoric of President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris for the incident. In a statement published on WhiteHouse.gov, Democratic presidential nominee Vice President Harris said she was deeply disturbed by the possible assassination attempt, adding that she condemns political violence. In a recent and overwhelming show of bipartisanship, the U.S. House of Representatives passed a bill to increase Secret Service funding with all members present supporting the measure.
The bill is passed, and without objection, the motion to reconsider is laid on the table.
Take a look at what happened.
The Secret Service recently acknowledged failures in securing Trump at the first attempted assassination in Pennsylvania, in which a bullet hit his ear. Now, the formation of a bipartisan task force to investigate those attempts and what's driving this wave of political violence, with both leaders speaking Sunday.
There's something has happened to us. Our culture has been greatly affected by this. Rhetoric is rhetoric. Both sides say things at times. You look back and say, well, I didn't mean it that way. And I said, that's the way it was perceived and that's the way it was taken. You've got to be careful of what you say and how you say it.
And there's a big difference between having tough debates during a political season, which is what we should do, and condemning political violence and saying there is no place in our American society, whether you're Republican and Democrat, for anybody ever to take actions into their own hands and to resort to violence.
Meanwhile, Trump has continued to push his widely debunked claim that Haitian immigrants in Springfield, Ohio, were kidnapping and eating people's pets. Claims refuted by Ohio's governor and the city's mayor, both Republicans. But a claim no less that's come with bomb and personal threats keeping the community here on edge.
Since we are Haitian, when news like that is published in the media, it scares us. We are just searching for a better life.
The guy turned and said, "You f***ing Asians." Then he pulled a knife on me.
Despite calls in recent days to cool heated rhetoric, both campaigns are continuing to hit out loudly against each other on the campaign trail.
If Kamala Harris is reelected, she will kill the American dream forever. She's not competent to be president either, but I don't want to be rude. I don't want to be rude. She's not competent.
We got folks running as Republicans for governor that are proud to refer themselves as Nazis. Let's not pretend that there's a gradual difference between the folks that are running here.
Early voting is already underway in some states ahead of the November 5th election. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
Villagers in Baja, which is about 100 miles south of Budapest, were navigating flooded streets in boats on Sunday. Floodwaters are expected to peak before moving south toward Serbian and Croatian localities. Reuters correspondent Olivia Zelino takes us there.
With a paddle in hand, Antal Alega set off in his boat down the flooded streets of Baja, Hungary, on Sunday. He says this kind of flooding is unprecedented for his village, located about 100 miles south of Budapest.
It has never happened before that there are three floods in one year. Experts say this is the consequence of global warming and the extreme weather.
Over the past week, floods have wreaked havoc across Central Europe, leaving a trail of destruction from Romania to Poland. In Budapest, drone footage of the Danube River showed several submerged jetties. The river is forecasted to reach higher than 27 feet, near record levels, but still below those seen in 2013. The swollen river has caused widespread damage, including further north in Nagy Moros. Here, farmer Laszlo Batki wades through what's left of his plot. He says most of it is underwater, ruining the crops of organic tomatoes, peppers, radishes, and lettuce he was preparing to harvest. Despite the damage, he told Reuters he thinks he can take steps, such as switching to more traditional crops, to adapt to more frequent floods in the years to come.
Reuters correspondent Olivia Zelino. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Scott Walterman.
We are here to bring multilateralism back from the brink.
United Nations Secretary Antonio Guterres kicking off the Summit of the Future on Sunday as the United Nations General Assembly gets underway. VOA's UN correspondent Margaret Bashir has more from the UN.
The UN General Assembly kicked off a marathon week of diplomacy with a summit for the future. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres.
I called for this summit because our world is heading off the rails and we need tough decisions to get back on track.
The signature event adopted by consensus a wide-ranging Pact for the Future, a blueprint aimed at ensuring that international institutions can deliver in a world that has changed dramatically since they were created in 1945. Russia, which raised numerous objections to elements of the pact as the months-long negotiations were wrapping up last week, sought to amend the document moments before its adoption, but failed. The pact has lofty goals for eradicating poverty, ending hunger, and building peaceful and inclusive societies. It also seeks to bridge the digital divide. Now the hard work of implementing it begins. Mia Motley is the Prime Minister of Barbados.
But our people know instinctively that this will only be talk unless there's a fundamental change in what we do and how we do it, and who is seen and heard in the corridors of decision-making.
The Secretary General met one-on-one with several world leaders Sunday, including Leslie Voltaire, a member of Haiti's Transitional Presidential Council. They discussed the need to ensure an elected government is in place by February 2026, as agreed by Haitian stakeholders, and to work together to boost international support for addressing gang violence and the dire humanitarian situation. The wars in Gaza, Ukraine, and Sudan will be center stage this week. Millions of people have been displaced or made refugees from just these three conflicts, and humanitarian efforts to assist them are under strain. Filippo Grandi is the UN High Commissioner for Refugees.
Humanitarians are not stretchable forever. We also have limitations, and I warn decision makers, politicians, that unless they redouble efforts to put a peaceful end or to negotiate ceasefires at least, we are going to be in trouble.
Grandi expressed concern about spillover from the Gaza war, most recently in Lebanon. He told VOA that an expansion of the conflict may have incalculable consequences. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
Also in the U.S. for the U.N. General Assembly is Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi. He was in New York's Long Island suburbs talking to a crowd of Indians now living and working in the U.S.
Kalhi, President Biden, mujhe.
He's saying just yesterday, President Biden took me to his home in Delaware. His affection is warmth. It was a moment that touched my heart. The respect is for the 1.4 billion Indians. The respect is for you. This respect is for your achievements. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky arrived in the United States on Sunday, also to attend sessions at the UN General Assembly, and urged his partners to help achieve a shared victory for what he called a truly just peace. In his video, Zelensky said Ukraine was doing everything it could by acquiring weapons and through diplomacy. As the war rages in Ukraine and Zelensky travels the world for help fighting it, a business owner in the U.S. city of Baltimore, who was born in Kyiv, has started a charity to help Ukrainian children affected by the war. Andrei Boris has this story narrated by Anna Rice.
Arthur Anshansky is a Kyiv native who founded a charity called Hope Children of Ukraine, and he's running it far from his homeland. Anshansky lives in Baltimore, Maryland now, where he owns an IT company. He founded the charity in 2021. It helps fund online education for Ukrainian children. It offers lessons in English and personal development and provides psychological and humanitarian support.
What I found about children was, they're motivated. They're motivated to, obviously, to grow, to build career, to build a life for themselves.
Today, the foundation is helping over 200 children, most of them from frontline areas of the country or occupied territories of Ukraine.
My name is Alina. I'm 14. I'm from the city of Bakhmut.
My name is Nastya, and I'm from the Zaporizhia region.
I'm from Kharkov. I'm 16.
I'm from Kherson.
I'm Yegor. I'm from Nikopol.
Sofia is from Kherson. The foundation is helping keep her dreams alive as she battles blood cancer.
I would love to go abroad to study, and when I get rich there, I would love to return to Ukraine. And I have a dream to open an oncology hospital that allows some non-allergenic animals, because when I was in hospital, I really missed my pets.
Yehor lost his home in Nikopol at the start of the war.
Life changed dramatically. My house was bombed. My dad died during the shelling. Sorry, it's hard to talk about it.
But his dreams of studying abroad help, says Yehor.
I'm doing online classes now. It's going well. But I'd love to go to a physical school, not talk to the screen.
The charity helps link students to educational programs and industries.
What do you want to be when you want to grow up? I want to be a software developer. Great. We're going to present to you opportunities to align with somebody in the industry that may be able to recommend to you a path to get to where you want to be.
Anshansky says Hope Children of Ukraine plans to take on additional 300 Ukrainian students. For Andriy Boris in Baltimore, Maryland, Anna Rice, VOA News.
The U.S. state of California is long known as a trendsetter, and as such, Governor Gavin Newsom signed legislation on Sunday banning plastic grocery bags. The ban solidifies California as a leader in tackling the global plastic pollution crisis, according to Oceana's plastics campaign director, Christy Leavitt. Praising lawmakers for safeguarding California's coastline, marine life, and communities from single-use plastic grocery bags. And finally, the latest trend in movie making is mini-movies. Chinese production companies are pumping out short-form, low-budget, high-drama series streaming straight to mobile devices. It's part of a booming new industry challenging Hollywood. Reuters correspondent Zachary Goldman explains the whole thing for us.
A medieval castle in Zhengzhou, China, looks like a movie set. Lights, costumes, directors directing. But this story isn't for the big screen. It's not a Netflix-style series either. It's aiming for the smallest screens in the shortest segments. This is one of what have become known as Chinese micro-dramas. Small as they are, they're part of a booming $5 billion industry. And they're a lifeline for actor Zhu Jian. The 69-year-old retiree plays the powerful patriarch in this tale called Grandma's Moon. It's chock full of melodrama, but each episode is a mere minute long, timed to keep viewers watching and paying for more.
In the micro-drama, every few episodes, there's a plot twist. At the moment of the twist, it requires you to pay before you can continue watching. Just when you're fully engaged, right at the most exciting part. When you're hooked and can't stop, it stops and you have to pay. That's how it operates to survive.
Stories like this stream in apps that prompt viewers to pay for more content. The leader in this space is Kuaishou. One media analytics company estimated Kuaishou accounted for 60% of the top 50 Chinese microdramas last year. A Kuaishou executive said at a media conference in January that the app featured 68 titles that notched more than 300 million views last year. He said four of their titles were watched over a billion times. Reuters has been unable to independently verify those figures. The analytics firm App Figures said three major China-backed microdrama apps were downloaded 30 million times across both Apple's App Store and Google Play in the first quarter of 2024, grossing $71 billion internationally. For actor Zhu Jian, the industry is pretty simple. Low budgets, high profits.
My understanding is that it's like fast food. While long dramas are like a lavish feast, micro-dramas are more like fast food. The required investment is generally in the range of a few hundred thousand, typically between 300,000 to 1 million yuan.
That's between $42,000 and $142,000 US, mere pennies compared to Hollywood budgets. The boom in micro-dramas in China has brought scrutiny from the ruling Communist Party. In 2022 and 2023, the National Media Regulator removed 25,300 micro-dramas, close to 1.4 million episodes, due to what it called their, quote, pornographic, bloody, violent, lowbrow, and vulgar content. The regulator didn't respond to Reuters' questions for this report. Zhu Jian hopes his story will follow the sort of Cinderella-style rags-to-riches path laid out in the very micro-dramas that employ him. He's a former railway employee who now lives off his pension and occasional acting gigs. But as microdramas gain in popularity, actors' salaries have also grown. While extras earn as little as $17 daily, leading roles can pay $280 a day, said Zhu, adding that main actors in big productions can now make more than double that rate.
Reuters correspondent Zachary Goldman reporting. This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of everyone at VOA, thank you so much for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Scott Walterman.